On this episode of Industry Relations, Rob and I try to take it down a notch and continue our discussion on the NAR settlement. Let's go.
This is Industry Relations, a podcast that's at the intersection of real estate and technology from an insider's perspective with Rob Hahn and Greg Robertson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with Rob and Greg. This is your co-host, the notorious Rob, and as always, the fabulous Greg Robertson, everybody.
Ouch.
You hit your microphone. I know. No. Look, I don't know what we're going to call this, but you know, last week, as you remember, when we ended and we had a little fun on Twitter afterwards, we were kind of going at it. And in fact, what we promised our viewers was that we would pick it up this week because we ran out of time last week. I'm assuming you're good with that. I know you came loaded for a bear. You're ready.
Yeah. I've read a few things on the comments and Twitter of
right on.
Well, I guess they like mom and dad fighting. But that you had me in a tizzy because I was dropping so many F bombs, right?
I know.
I didn't necessarily agree with that. I mean, it's not like I'm not known for using a swear word every now and then. But
I know.
I think, but you're so usually, like,
yeah,
you're so, you know, I don't know how Sonny puts up with you, man. It's just, you're just one, either it's this or that. So, you know, we were kind of getting into that. So,
right. So we're going to continue it. And for a reminder, this was kind of how we ended our episode last week. Where's the fairness?
$418 million, man. What are you fucking? They're the only one paying.
They're the only one paying of the
$418 million. Where's that? What does that mean? Nothing.
That's NAR's problem. Like,
well,
whatever.
No, but I mean, again, they're the only ones paying. There's other people fucking paying.
Dude,
also,
I'm a $2 billion company. I got to pay something. Okay, so let's pick up from there, right? In fact, I will give you the floor, sir, because I know you've, you know, looked into some more.
Sure.
Had a week to think
yeah,
about
no,
it.
No, no. So, I mean, All I was trying to say is, and you know, I'm not an attorney. I'm not your attorney, as they say.
Yeah.
But I think where my breakdown here with you was, is that I think you're saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, is that, okay, this is the settlement that was negotiated. This is the way it's going to go. There's going to be no other changes to this. And that's it. So you got to deal with this or not deal with this, right? And I was saying, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think that there's always going to be some room for some things to tweak in and out here as both sides, because I think probably on the plaintiff side and on the defendant side here, they're both going to go after this got out there like, oh, we didn't think of that. And I think they're both going to have issues that they would like to kind of not resolve, but like, you know,
sure,
let's, can we make a couple tweaks here? Well, you know,
sure,
what I was thinking of making a couple tweaks here. So what do you have? Right. So,
sure.
I didn't think you were like, thought that that was possible at all.
No,
and
that's not
what
I was
kind
saying.
Of frustrating.
No, okay. No, that's not what I was saying. Okay. So let's actually, maybe I was hoping we're going to go at it like battle royale, but we might actually achieve understanding instead, which is rare in this day and age, but let me explain exactly what I meant by that. I was frustrated, I guess, because you're not understanding this part. So what I'm saying is, of course, the settlement agreement can be revised by the parties. Okay? So if the plaintiff's lawyers and the NAR come back together, hey, we've had a couple weeks of reaction, turns out there's some things we overlooked, we need to change some things. Of course, they can do that and then file another settlement agreement with the court saying, hey, we talked it over, here's a revised settlement agreement, please approve this agreement instead. What I was thinking was two things. Number one, and I've heard this a lot, the idea that the judge could just kind of tweak it on his own, right? Like,
yeah,
in theory, that's possible, right? In other words, federal judges potentially, and I've had a number of conversations with lawyers about this, potentially do have the power to do something like that, right? They could look
at
the agreement.
That happened in Nosovec, didn't it? Where the judge came back and said, this is not doing anything for the plaintiffs,
right?
Right? This is all going to the attorneys, right?
Right. Basically, it was like, yeah, this doesn't make sense, so go back and redo it. So it is possible the judge could come back and be like, yeah, I'm not super happy with the settlement agreement, right? My point there is that is extremely, extremely rare. And federal judges are very loath to do something like that. Even the Noslek case where the judge came in, right? If the party said, yeah, we're not, this is good as it is, right? Then the judge would simply say, yeah, I'm not approving it as written. That decision can be appealed, right? And like 9 times out of 10, that decision will likely be overruled because the presumption is if the two parties, and they're suing each other, right? If they came to an agreement, it's kind of like, who the hell are you, some third party judge, to intervene and put your views into this, right? Again, there are rare cases where that's allowed. It's just not often. So when there's a settlement agreement, chances are it's going to go through unless somebody objects. So what I was bringing up was, okay, this is a settlement agreement that the parties have reached. Who the hell is going to come in and say, hey, judge, don't approve this, right? And that only really, when you think about it, it leaves like the Department of Justice. We talked about that last week, why we thought it's unlikely the Department of Justice would come in. But that could still happen. In the week since, I've had a lot of conversation with a lot of people who think that, you know, actually they think maybe the Department of Justice did not know that this settlement caught them by surprise. That would surprise me. It would shock the shit out of me because of all the reasons we talked about, Catchmark, you know, talking to all that, the lawyers, you know, in this case. But it's possible, right? And if that's the case, then we will see the Department of Justice come in with an intervention in this case, right? Which then wrecks everything, okay? The other possibility is that some other third party comes in and says, hey, judge, don't approve this, okay? Who's that other third party? So to your point, it's likely going to have to be the two parties saying, hey, you know what? This ain't going to work as written. We need to revise it. And that's where I thought, and this is where we were like yelling and shouting at each other. I'm saying, okay, the apology tour happened last Friday. Okay, and I've now heard a little bit more about what happened.
Okay, well, we got some fresh tea. Let's hear it.
Right?
Spill, baby, spill.
I've heard it didn't go well.
Shocking. Right?
I've heard – what? Yeah, I know. I've heard that most of the brokers in the room left that room feeling even angrier than they were when they walked into it. Right? Again, there's a bunch of stuff that I can't really discuss, but I can say that it did not go well, and the brokers they're not mollified. If this was meant to be an apology tour to get the $2 billion club to understand what was done, and that did not happen, did not work. Okay, so what I was bringing up was, okay, suppose the $2 billion club comes back and there's a revolt, right? They're like, no, screw this, we're not happy with this, yada yada yada. Like,
what I'd said last time too is I hope the $2 billion club, as we're calling them, didn't just come in with, you know, complaints, but, you know, right. some solutions as well. I mean,
sure. But let's say they didn't. Let's say they have no solutions. They just come in, they just complain, they bitch, right? And Eric goes, yeah, you know what? This isn't going to work, right? They go back to the plaintiff's lawyers and say, hey, guys, we need to revise the settlement agreement. Okay, this isn't going to work as written because the $2 billion club is unhappy. Fine. So the lawyers go, sure, we're good with that. Why don't we make it $1
billion? Right. Or, again, that's one way. Like you said before, I mean, I think, you know, there should be multiple kind of solutions. I haven't given it much thought, but, I mean, it can be $1 billion. It can be something else, right? I mean, it could be another tiered way, or it could be
Sure, but let's
go. Or maybe NAR takes more of the burden and lessens that. I mean,
so that's what I was getting at. What I was getting at is, let's say NAR comes back to the plaintiffs' lawyers, we're going to make it $1 billion, okay? Plaintiffs' lawyers go, we're good with that. My point is, now NAR has to go out and now say, hey, you know, it was the $2 billion line. It's actually going to be $1 billion line. You're NAR. How the fuck do you communicate this now to the brokers who are between $1 billion and $2 billion, who thought they were, oh, good, this is a great settlement, we're off scot-free, right? Now NAR comes back to him and says, yeah, you know how you thought you were scot-free? You're not. You're going to be paying in too, right? So, okay, so that's PR disaster. That's now you got the $1 billion
above. Well, this is just another day in the life for NAR, though. I mean, you know, it's just PR disaster after PR disaster.
Okay, but you know what I mean? So that's one. So what I was pointing out was, if the $2 billion club, whatever, they're pissed off, the issue is this line that says everyone above this line pays, everybody below gets off scot-free. So what I was saying was, either whatever the resolution is, the only way to keep the $2 billion club happy is either everybody pays or nobody pays. And that is an either or, right? Because if you drew the line at $1 billion, now it's like the $1 billion club is pissed off and everyone underneath it is like, yay, right? So you're right. Maybe the solution is, okay, nobody pays. NAR is going to take the whole burden, right? And then effective what that means is everybody pays, because NAR, the only way they could do that is if they raised special assessment dues.
Yeah, special assessment. Maybe it's a split between. Maybe it's the same structure, but they have a special assessment of $225 a year for the next 4 years, along with the next maybe. 4 years, and that reduces maybe. The $2 billion club to something like, okay, this seems a little bit more reasonable, right? I mean, there's a what do they say? 1,000 ways, you know, nine ways to skin a cat or something. I mean, there's a lot of different ways I think they could solve this issue, right? I mean,
maybe.
And really, they made their own bed here, right? We've been talking about the communication, and they're blaming, you know, confidentiality or anything else. But I mean, and you know, who knows if we were in that room or what? I mean, you know, you're dealing with deadlines. You're dealing with you know, everybody wanting to do this. It's a tough position to be in, right? I mean, I wouldn't want to be in that position of on the fly coming up with like this this thing that's going to make everybody happy, right? It's tough.
Sure. So I was saying, like I said, I think we've achieved understanding that we're going to argue more. I mean, my point behind all this was, I thought this settlement was a huge win for NAR. Okay. It turns out it's a gigantic loss. It turns out this could be an existential crisis for NAR, right? And that's the piece where, like, you don't see that.
I don't agree with that, but I mean, okay, I still think it's a win for NAR members. Absolutely, it is.
How?
I mean, every NAR member is not going to be liable for anything going forward.
But they won't be
sued. I know what you're
anyway.
Saying. It's like, are they going to be, you know, anybody, you know, have they been sued? No, nobody has sued agents, but, you know, there could be all those types of things. But I mean,
no, but
I think they had to take care of their.
Right. There is no theory under which an NAR member can be sued. Okay, so NAR protected. What?
Not now, no, right?
No, never. There was never a theory. Even if the settlement is rejected by the court,
there is no
theory.
Your use of like these, you know, these kind of hyperbolic, like never, and it's not going to happen or whatever. I mean, anything can happen, man. I've been involved
so
in all this
kind of
stuff.
Again. So let's go through this again, right? There is no way for an individual agent to be sued for liability.
I mean, I've heard you say there's no way that this judge is going to allow NAR to win this, you know, this letter, the settlement letter. What happens? The
what
judge comes back. I mean, with the, you know, let's go back a couple issues, right? Where you were 100% certain that no judge would like, listen to NAR about their arguments of that, hey, we already had a settlement with the DOJ. The DOJ ripped that up. They can't do that. We have look what happened. The judge did do that. I mean, there's
judge
a lot of instances.
You mean the trial judge in the,
I mean, you know, but that was something you were really, I mean, we could bring the,
find the tape. Yeah.
Right. This is never going to happen. This is never going to happen here. I mean, again, it's like a very binary, you know.
But in this case, it's black letter law.
Okay, so this time, Rob, it's gonna be exactly the way
you
say.
You know what? Just like the Trump-appointed judge decided he wanted to stick to the Biden administration, so he held against the DOJ in that lawsuit, and he's about to be reversed by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So I guess that could happen. I suppose this, you know, anything. Some judge could be like, you know what? Yeah, you could sue the agent. You know, and then that's going to get instantly reversed on appeal. Why? Because the agent, this is the part where things like the language is so unfortunate. The individual agent is not the agent of the consumer. The individual agent is the agent of the broker, and the broker is the agent of the consumer. So you can't sue an agent. They don't have the fiduciary relationship that agents love to talk about. That relationship is actually not between the agent and the consumer. That relationship is actually between the broker and the consumer. And the agent has a relationship with the broker. And that's, you know, again, so maybe it'd be better if we just call the salespersons, right? Because the license is broker license, salesperson license, right? So my point is the 1.6 million realtor members, there's no theory on which they can be sued. Because
so why
not
would NAR even fight this anyway? There's no theory that their members could be,
Brokers can be sued.
Yeah.
Right? The brokers can be sued, not the 1.6 million, right? The broker can be sued.
Right.
But I guess associations can be sued.
But what you're saying is that by NAR only covering a lot of the franchisors, right? Some of those are not really brokerages, right? I mean, some of them have some brokerage unit, but most of the revenue is generated by franchise fees.
Sure, they're not covered under the settlement.
Right. I mean,
brokers.
If they've cut a deal, right?
So yeah. Anywhere, Remax, Keller Williams, they did their own settlement, and all of their franchises are already covered under their settlements.
Right.
What this settlement did was it covered all of the non-franchisee, non-home services, because BHHS and home services are separate. Not part of this. We're going to pursue our own thing, right? So like the independents, right? And then they threw the $2 billion club under the bus.
This had to be negotiated. There had to be something. The first thing they come up with, I guess, or maybe it's probably not the first thing they ended up with. They probably went through iterations of trying to do this other ways. But what they ended up with in the agreement to get everybody to get out of that goddamn room was the $2 billion club was going to do this.
And Greg, my point is, and this was sort of my point, this is where the ginormous fucking mistake comes in. If you're NAR, you cannot agree to that settlement without going and checking with your $2 billion club.
And I would argue that's what they're kind of doing now, right? They've already checked in with it. It sounds like it didn't go well. And hopefully we have some, because here's the thing, it's so obvious that these guys they want to be paid, right?
Of course.
So I think that there's some room here for them to come back to the table and NAR to say, listen, this is going to be if they believe you, it's going to be an existential threat to us. And, talking to our people, this ain't going to happen and you're not going to get paid. So let's come up together.
Yes.
Here's another proposed settlement to happen.
Yes. My point is.
But I mean, for something that was basically started out at $5 billion or $6 billion, whatever the treble damages were, down to $418
million. Yeah.
I mean, well, that's a good starting point at least.
So I thought the monitor like that part's like unbelievable. It's like you just won't want to acknowledge the fact that look, the time to do that is before you enter agreement.
Well,
in other words,
I mean they had some restrictions on there, and I guess I got to take them at their word that they could not bring anybody in this, and this is the best they could do in the situation.
Well, then you can't settle. You cannot sign this agreement without saying we need to go talk to our people.
Right. I guess I'm more of, and again, this might be a naivete thing, right? But to me, you have to ship something, right? You have to ship something and then you're going to get feedback for what you ship and then you iterate, right? So again, I'm not a legal scholar here.
Sure. No, it's that's not a legal scholar. None of that bullshit. I'm saying, let's say you're the plaintiff's attorney, right?
Right.
And I'm the NAR attorney. And say, hey, here's kind of the settlement thing that we're coming to. $2 billion above, they're going to pay this, right? And I say to you, listen, I have to take this to my people. Because we could sign whatever agreement right now that you're demanding and you want to have confidentiality, this, that, and the other thing. I'm telling you, it's not worth the paper it's written on, right? We are a trade organization. We're a membership organization. I have to take this to my members. I have to take this to these people and see if they're good with it. You have to say that if you're NAR, right?
The question I would ask is, why haven't they?
Because they're arrogant as fuck. That's the answer.
Yeah.
They thought, we'll just enter this agreement and then, these guys are going to do what we tell them to do.
I mean, I get you. I understand what you're saying. And that would be very sad if that's the case.
That was my entire point. I said this was a humongous win for NAR until we found out they threw – like literally the largest brokers under the bus without talking to them, without consulting with them, without even like alerting them, right? Like in a way, it's kind of like, I don't even know what the right analogy here is, right? I think about like, you know, it's okay to cheat on your wife if your wife gives you permission, kind of, right? Like there's some basketball players, right, who's supposed to have a hall pass, right? So if you went to, hey, honey, I met this, you know, whatever, and I feel like, no, hold on. It's, okay, it's like, right. Oh my God, what? But if your wife says, you know what, I'm going to give you a pass this one time, right? Then there's no problem. The time not to do it is after you've done it and say, hey, listen, this happened, but you should be good with it. No, you got to do it ahead of time, right? And to me, how you fuck that up is just beyond me. So now,
I don't know.
Is it possible?
I mean, right. I think, you know, maybe we need like, you know, Ed Zorn was a mediation mm-hmm. expert, right? He'd done a lot of mediation. And I've been involved in some mediation.
Sure.
And basically what happens there is that they want to do it. The way you do that is you get everybody in the room that has something at stake. And then that way you can all agree for whatever right. situation, right. because this was just a wide varying thing. They could only get so many people in that room.
Right.
I was just a little bit, I think we were both shocked about the timing of this, right? They wanted to get, I mean, there was such a rush here, but at the same, you know, and to get this out and everybody's AEI, the way they handled this thing was, I think, really piss poor, but maybe it goes over to the overall strategy. They thought that regardless of, you know, whether or not the $2 billion, whoever else, the most immediate thing the highest order bit here is getting this done and off our, you know, as far as settled, or at least, you know, out there right now saying we've settled this. That in somebody's mind strategically was more important than anything.
Sure.
And I think what we're discovering is whoever laid out that strategy was wrong. Right.
We're seeing
it in a couple ways. We're seeing it in the way that it was communicated to not only the membership, but also the public. And then now we're seeing it in how it was wrong in the settlement. Right,
right.
Now, again, I'm assuming, and it's probably a wrong assumption, that there is still some time during this kind of in between process of now and July 24th or June, whatever it is, that they can maybe, after getting this out there, because I just think of everything as software. If I send out a blog post, hey, here's a new feature we're releasing, okay, and we're going to publicly say this is what it is, so different from like actually shipping that product and people start sure. using it and start like, sure. oh fuck, this is what this is wrong. This screws sure. up my whole workflow. It's there's a even like on when I see mockups in Figma. It's not the same as having that thing in you. So when you have a settlement agreement that everybody can go pour over, that's so much different. So I I don't know if this is, you know, I'm just assuming there would be a mechanism to that it had to get out there in this manner so people would take it seriously, then take as big a look as they can at this.
Okay.
And then come to this kind of thing. Now, again, I could be completely wrong.
It's fucking suicidal is all I'm getting at. Right. So let's use the software analogy. You decide, you know what? You used to run Cloud CMA, right? Let's say you decided, your board says, hey, you know what, Greg? You know, we're going to change the pricing model for Cloud CMA, right? Every broker, every agent who makes less than $100,000 a year, free. Everyone over $100,000, we're going to double their annual whatever fee, right? Do you just go on that? Like, here's a new price, everybody. Or do you maybe call up some people and go, hey, listen, here's what we're thinking about. What do you think about it? Are you good with this? Explain your rationale. If you just went out the gate and said, hey, everybody, going forward, if you're an agent, you make under $100,000 a year, Cloud CMA is free. If you make over $100,000 a year, your fees just doubled. You announce it, and then your customers go, fuck you, Greg. And then you got to scramble. Like, just think, like, that's what we're talking about here. Right.
I think how I would handle a thing like that is that I would probably do something. I would actually ship. I would actually make that price change in a region, a test region. Like we'll pick a smaller MLS or some MLS out there and put that out there and see what happens. Because again, and I would probably call people also, but
of course.
you're not going to get as. You don't know what you don't know, right? Until you ship, you don't know. You can fine, even if you talk to 1,000 people.
You got to call some people.
Yeah, I that would be part of my process. But at the but really, for me to really know, unless it was really just something that I didn't think. Oh God, I never thought of that. If it was just griping. Well, I don't know exactly if again regionally. I wouldn't fucking do it because now I need to confirm type of thing.
So that's what I'm getting. I'm saying the failure here is not that they did the settlement agreement. The failure here is you gotta call like Hobie Hannah and be like, hey Hobie, here's what we're talking about.
Well what if but you know what he's gonna say?
Okay, when it's okay, well, I understand your perspective. Here's my point. At least he feels like I had an opportunity to, voice.
Sure. No,
then you got to call fucking Thad Wong at Ad Properties. Here's what we're talking about, guys. Like, I know it seems really unfair, but here's our rationale. What do you think? Yeah, we're totally opposed to that. Okay, cool.
Everybody's going to say that. Anybody you call.
Of course. But then you got to fucking go back to the plaintiff's attorneys and go, listen, guys, we can't do it this way.
Yeah, I mean, but didn't you already know that?
What do you mean? Didn't you already know that?
I mean, nobody's going to know that. Nobody's going to be. I think everybody. There's always going to be somebody. There's going to be a lot of pissed off people, no matter what you do. Whether you start at a billion, you start at 2 billion, you start at 500,000. There's going to be a lot of fucking pissed off people here, right?
Sure. So, but here's where things get really fucked up. Agreed. Here's where things get really fucked. Imagine the settlement agreement actually said every broker is going to pay 0.25%. Or because it's all everyone, it's going to be 0.025% or something, right? Everyone, whether you're, Howard Hanna or you're a three-person brokerage, you're going to pay this money or get into mediation, right? And you're covered. Now, this was the point I was making over and over last week. Now, none of the big guys feel like they got thrown under the bus because they're treated the same way as everybody else. In actual dollar terms, they have to pay more, right? But that's because they're just bigger. But it's not like the competitor across town that's $1.8 billion. They're not getting away scot-free, right? They're not going to have an additional $5 million to use to recruit my agents away from me. How you forget that as NAR, how you don't realize that as NAR, a political organization, a membership organization, that's the part I cannot understand. And the only explanation for it that I could come up with is hubris, is arrogance, the notion that NAR really thinks they rule the industry. And what they say goes, and when they make an announcement, when they go to a settlement, these fucking brokers could bitch and whine, but they will eventually fall in line. It's the only explanation for it. Right? And I'm saying that is suicidal. That type of attitude does, in fact, lead to everybody – every broker just saying, fuck this. We need to be out. Right. And I said, everybody. Okay. Right. Go ahead.
Okay. So what we know is that percentage point is really, you could almost looking at it as a starting point as really maybe even like a shock. And again, let's look at it this way, right? The precedent is always, and we talked a little bit about this last week, but let me use less curse words and be more calm on it.
this show's not going to be as popular because we're not fighting.
We
as
know
much.
Already that yeah, the price of admission, the price of settling, had been established, and that establishment point was half your balance sheet, right?
Mm-hmm. Half your cash.
Cash. And that was, I don't want to say people were happy with that, but that's what several of these larger organizations were paying. Right.
That's right.
So, and so far they had a few. And in fact, after this was announced, Compass also, settled at actually a little bit lower than
less than half the cash. Yes.
Less than half. Right. So, yep. To me, you could argue like the $2 billion club, but maybe this was all just put in there to nudge these guys into the realm of like thinking, listen, you're going to have to we got to nudge you into the realm of this is what the pound of flesh they want. Mm-hmm. It's half your cash. And otherwise, and this is maybe why the plaintiffs were okay with it. You know, we're not going to ask for fucking, you know, whatever 0.25% of $2 billion. I mean, that they knew that was never going to happen. But hey, NAR, mm-hmm. can you help these guys move along? Because to get them to what we need, mm-hmm. what has been already established as the sure. pound of flesh that we want.
Sure.
Right. And maybe that's it. Maybe there's a justification in NAR's sure. head or in the lead negotiator's head of that's what it was. It's like you guys are focusing on this $2 billion company. All we're trying to do here is nudge them along to get everybody off here. And so far, it's been established this has been what sure. the precedent has been set of what this is, the penalty is going to be.
Sure. Fine. It still doesn't explain the discriminatory treatment. And this is the point I keep making. Well, it's not,
but if you put it that way, is it discriminatory where if you're in your mind, what you're doing is just getting them to nudge them to pay what has already been paid? That's already been established.
Why are you not nudging the $1.8 billion brokerage?
Yeah. I mean, there's, again, I wasn't in the room. You weren't in the room as far as how those things went on.
But we see the result, right? And this is my point. What they've effectively done. It's almost like I keep trying to come up with analogies on why this is so offensive, why this is so bad, right? It's like, you know, the whole like playing favorites with your kids, right? Like as a parent, you know, man, if you like only give birthday presents to one kid, right? It's not the dollar value of the present. It's the fact that you're only giving presents to one kid and not the other, or you're punishing one kid and not the other, right? Even though they do the same thing, right? Like, imagine if both my kids went and, I don't know, fucking painted my living room, but I only punished the younger one. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you know what it's more like, Rob? It's more like, it's very progressive, to put it in your terms or right? It's a tax the rich
right.
Philosophy.
Right. Right.
That's, I
right.
think that's the analogy you're looking for.
Right. And that is what causes the problem. Like I said, NAR gone out and said, every broker pays, right? And they just announced it. I think you have far less of an issue, actually, right? Or nobody pays and NAR is going to pay $4 billion.
Hasn't everybody paid? I mean, that $14.8 million came from the membership, right? I mean, they essentially paid.
So is the $2 billion right? club not going to pay any assessments? Are they not paying dues? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, so, I guess if you added up all – hold on. If you added up all the – and I know what you're going to say here, but let's say that NAR paid $418 million, right? And then you look at the 94 that are part of the $2 billion club. And after all is settled – right after they go back and like half the cash and they do new negotiations because, you know, so far they seem to be less than half the cash. So, you know, as they have different circumstances, those guys end up paying $400 million. Is there an equity there, an equality there of like
– Okay. Are they going to keep paying dues
or not? I
love
your expression when you're like – you look at me like, Greg, are you the dumbest guy I've ever met in my life?
No, it's like you're just ignoring like – Anyway, all right, look, I think we've beaten this.
I understand that there's a line and there's $2 billion up got screwed and the rest. I mean, it is not an elegant way of doing this, for sure. And it's suicidal.
Because like I said, okay. To your point, let's say they go back and we have to change this, right? And now they have to go out and say, hey, everyone's going to pay. Now you've pissed off everybody under $2 billion who thought they were out free and clear.
I understand. Okay, let's put it out there. Okay, so let's do this. Let's stake bet here. Stake bet, stake dinner bet. Okay.
Okay.
My bet is going to be before July 24th, there will be substantial changes to the settlement that mm-hmm. both NAR and the plaintiffs agree to, that is going to remedy, or at least nobody's going to be fucking happy, regardless, right? But that is going to make people less pissed off, or they're going to be able to stomach it, right? It is not going to go to as it is written in regard to this $2 billion club. There's going to be some machination that's going to change there. That's what I think is going to happen, along with some others like the date we talked about. I think the date is crazy.
Sure. The date is the easy one, right?
Yeah.
But
okay. That... So no, there's some changes that are easy, but I mean, some changes will be hard. I would say,
So, okay.
I'm betting that that's going to, that there is going to be there. Steak dinner. What say you?
What's hard about this, the reason why I'm hesitating is because we know that NAR listens to this podcast. We know that the Department of Justice listens to this podcast. We know that. We know that the Department of Justice listens to this podcast. Hi, DOJ. Hi, Jessica Leo. Right? Like, so we are influencing potentially the future in some respects, right? So it could be that
I think you know, put a way bigger thing than
what. Oh no, Greg Robertson, dude! You're giant steps. You're a very influential. You know.
Yeah, I think you're putting way too much weight on you and I. So,
but since this is all about me buying you dinner, sure, I'll take the other side of that, right? It's just because I want.
But, like, but hold on. I mean, last week you were like, it seemed like you were very
I wasn't saying that the settlement couldn't change. What I was saying is this. Fucks NAR big time. That was my point, right?
Oh God, I know. I gotta re-listen again.
You know the worst. Think of it this
that's,
way.
Maybe
you
I was hearing. Right. Maybe that's the reason I wasn't really listening to you, and I should have been listening more because that's you not what be I right. heard.
Right. You could be right, and the settlement could be changed. Okay, but the long-term effects of this move, and not even that long, is like I said. It's like you beat one of your kids, but not the other. The resentment, the lack of trust from the kid that you beat, is going to come out at some point. And I'm saying, fine, let's say they redo the settlement somehow. The entire $2 billion club has got to be sitting there going, you guys are willing to throw us under the bus, right? And it wasn't until we said something that you kind of modified things to be whatever. And then if you're in the $1 billion club, to your point, this is socialism, right? This is communism. This time it was the $2 billion club, guys. Why am I safe?
Right? No, and I mean...
Right?
Nobody's
safe.
And
I think the conversation will get to something is going to break. Something dramatic is going to have to happen because NAR, the institution, and everyone makes it like you hate realtors. No, I don't hate realtors. I fucking love realtors. I'm saying this particular institution with this particular set of leaders have made such missteps that are like politics 101 that this is going to have an impact. I don't know when that is. I don't know what that is. I'm just saying it's going to have an impact, right?
I think that before this happened, Rob, there's been so much incompetence, I think is the word you're using. I'll use it too, on especially the communications angle. Sure.
Terrible.
Yeah, there's going to be consequences for this. Absolutely.
Right. Right.
I think that the fact, though, if there are changes made and, again, there's modifications – I'm not going to say this proves my point of like they had to do something. They knew they're going to change at the end. But I mean, it's an ugly process. I mean, watching the sausages get made is not a good thing. I wouldn't necessarily call it up as a win for NAR. I mean, to me, $418 million, fuck, man. That's a win.
That's a win. It's a humongous win.
I mean,
it's $418 million over four years.
Yeah.
And it's only $5 million. Followed by $195 million. Like this is a ginormous win financially. Yeah. No question about it. Okay. It's a ginormous win from a rules change standpoint because, frankly, nothing has been changed. Yeah. I'm saying the big loss is the fact that they've split their association. They've created enormous distrust and anger in a big part of the membership. And in order to undo that, they're going to have to piss off the other half.
And you haven't even talked about the calamity that is the public relations nightmare that they've had with the general public. I mean,
of course.
Again, it's shocking to me. What have we seen yet of, you know, and maybe they're not going to do it until, you know, they make some changes and get this actually settled. I don't know. It boggles my mind how the PR part of this is just.
And I think I wrote a post about this. My last post was about this. I saw Chiron Srivatsa, right, at Rio, do this hour-long webinar. Masterful. Utterly masterful.
Budge Hutsky, who you've talked about before, did a great
article.
Great job. Yeah.
Right. My thing was like, why can't Kevin Sears do this? I've seen him on like Jared James's podcast. He seems like a real like he seems like a really good communicator. He seems like an honest guy. He seems authentic.
He's in the machine, man. He's in the machine over there, right?
Right. And I'm saying, if I'm Kevin Sears, I start demanding heads roll, like right now, for making me look bad, making me, that's what I'm getting at. There, when I talk about, like, maybe NAR, the institution, survives in some way, but NAR as we know it today, I don't know how it gets over these, like, series of mistakes. And maybe that's a good thing, right? Because maybe that institution needs fundamental reform, right? In order to maybe get back to something. Because this ain't it. This ain't it. Right? Yeah. With the 900 fucking boards of directors that can't do anything, and this leadership team that's, let's face it, that's had some problems and some real controversy the last couple of years, who appear to be really good people, really effective communicators, but they're held back. It's like the PR and communication team's like, no. I'm like, I still cannot understand, Greg. Like, you tell me this. You're fucking NAR, right? The largest trade association in the world, probably a top five heavy hitter lobby, right? With however much money they spend on PR and communications, you can't get Kevin Sears on Joe Rogan. You can't get, you know what I mean, like your president on some podcast that's listened to by, you know, millions of people. Instead, you're doing these 30-second clips on CNBC. Who the fuck cares, right? 17,000 people watch that show. Who cares?
Like, yeah, I mean, the time to get on those types of things was before this all got out there as a preamble, as right when the news dropped, so that narrative now it would be a catastrophe.
That's a catastrophe.
You know, maybe once they actually settle, but I mean, right now it's like the narrative out there from the consumer's angle is just so out of whack from reality.
Oh, dude,
it would be a bloodbath.
It's going to get worse. And here's what I mean by that: we now know. President Biden here in Las Vegas at a fundraiser, right, straight up called out, like, yeah, I hope the realtors do their part to lower their fees so that they can save $30 billion from consumers. And it's like, what? Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw that video of KJP.
The video of her at the press, she had no clue what he was talking about. I mean, that was not
And yet she kept talking. She didn't just say, you know, I don't know enough about that. Like, let me investigate back. No. She kept talking. She kept stop treating American consumers like suckers. Right?
Well, if you go through and actually understand what she was saying, she was talking about these consumer fees that they've been talking about before, not specifically this. But when as a total, it looked like a disaster from a PR standpoint for NAR.
She could be saying she's not really talking about commissions, just talk about junk fees from these companies. Okay, look, the clear sort of analogy you're drawing is that somehow realtor commissions junk fees, right? So it's going to get worse.
Well, when you put those two that close together, that's what people are going to believe. And
that's what people are going to hear.
All that to me is a communication problem with NAR, that they weren't in front of this. They had to – again, the strategy – I try to think, what's the strategy? What's the most significant bit here? What did people think? What do we have? What is more important than anything? And it appears that it was speed. Fuck it that we can't talk to our $2 billion club. Fuck it that all the association executives are in San Diego. Fuck it, we don't have, you know, anybody queued up to go talk to the mainstream media. We got to get this news out here. And somebody thought the speed was the most significant bit, and it just was a completely wrong strategy to do it.
Sure.
I mean,
so
to me,
whoever
made that decision
probably should be fired.
Yeah, if they can
find that decision.
If you have 1,000 or 900 people that are
you're right, then they
all
need
around
to be
these
fired.
Things,
right? Yeah. But then they need to go, and that's what I'm saying. We're at this point now where I think. To some respect, the settlement agreement is a nothing burger, right? Not a whole lot's going to change. To some extent, the financial element of it was a humongous fucking win. I mean, there's just no question about it, right? We're looking at $450 billion in potential damages that no one can pay. Widespread bankruptcy all across the board. That's not going to happen. Now we're looking at everybody survives, right? So all of those are big wins. Along the way, the damage to this institution by the current crop of leadership is profound. is profound. Yeah. And what, to me, what it betrays is this sort of like sense of hubris, like we're the rulers and you fucking peons are going to do what we tell you. Like you should be glad that we got this great deal for you. It's like you've forgotten your membership organization and you're made up of brokers and agents, and brokers more than agents, to be honest, given the nature of the license law. Like, yo, something.
No, I mean, and you know happen. What? It's been not just this. That's the problem, right? I mean, it Correct. Started with this Correct. Sexual it's harassment the latest. Thing, and it just Correct. It's been a bad year. It was a bad year last year. It's a the momentum of this badness just keeps rolling. Unfortunately right. for them, they right. and you know, again, I can only imagine. You're Katie Johnson or some other of these, you know, you've been working on this. You've got leadership changes. You've got the damn association, you know, the president scandal that happened. The news media is all, I mean, this is just, those guys have got to be like in a war zone over there. And I generally sure. feel for those guys. But
sure.
if I had to jump on anything, but again, I go back to like, it has been communications, man. You know, it is just, it has been communications of,
sure.
They've made some, you know, some, they've shot themselves in the foot for sure. But some of this stuff is, you know, obviously incompetence also. Right. So
of course,
yeah.
Of course.
And that's... we hope to be, I mean, we, you know, you're right. Because people criticize us on Twitter saying that, you know, we're against NAR, we're against organized real estate. I mean, it's, I think both of you and I want it to just to be better. Right. Or, yeah. you know,
Yeah. As I wrote, man, look, like all my wife's a broker. My wife's a realtor. You know, like we all our friends are realtors. All our, you know what I mean? Like, no, we just think that the industry deserves better than this.
And it's sad. I mean, I was reading. There was an attorney that Andrea interviewed on Inman, right?
Yeah,
great interview.
Yeah, yeah. Robbie Braun. So
shout out to her. And it's just it's like. When attorneys come on to tell you how good a deal it is, oh, it's just icky. I'm sure the guy's a nice guy or whatever, but it's just a money grab, right? It's just, you can just tell it's like, oh, maybe this isn't going the way we expected. You guys got to realize this is really great and things are going to change. And, you know, he was also making the point that I know you were getting on top of on Twitter of like somebody saying, well, now there'd be technology innovation in real mm-hmm, estate. Mm-hmm. Like, man, what are you talking about? In 2021, yeah. I think there was like $19 billion were funded into prop tech. I mean, there's been innovation all over the place. People could go get a different type of services from real estate. I mean, it's just, what is, again, it does, you know, I'll be really candid about this. It's like, you see a lot of people talk about they doubt the mainstream media knows what they're doing or saying or whatever else. Right. And I'm like, come on, you guys are conspiracy theorists. Please stop that.
Right.
But
right.
seeing how this is the news of how the mainstream media has been depicting this and just really getting it so wrong. I mean, it does make you doubt everything fucking else, man.
Here's the thing, Greg. Here's where we'll leave, because again, we're running out of time, and maybe this has to be something we pick up. There's that, what's that saying? Once is accident, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. Okay. We're in an election year, right? And housing is going to be a big election issue. Big election issue. Why? Because it's completely unaffordable for younger generations, Gen Z, right? Some of the younger millennials, right? And everyone is bitching about it. Everyone's complaining about it. It is like the most, like if you think about the most direct impact of our shitty economy, no matter what the fucking sock puppets and the, you know, whatever the administration say, it's going to be things like food, like grocery prices, gas prices, and housing prices, right? So housing is going to be a major election year issue. Biden threw the first shot. Hey, I'm saving $30 billion from my administration, whatever, right? We're going to save $30 billion in, quote, junk fees for the American consumer. There's no, like, Trump's going to come out with something, right? He's going to have to talk about housing. Congressional candidates, Senate candidates, governors, mayor, like, they're going to talk about housing. This, the media, mainstream media, getting the narrative wrong. I'm kind of like, one time, maybe they got it wrong. When it's repeated, maybe that's a coincidence. At some point, we have to go, you know what? They're probably going to come after us next. Because remember back in 2008, you know, when we had the housing, the bubble burst, they went after bankers at that time. And I remember writing like posts in like 2010, 2011. I remember giving presentations around that time saying, the next time, they can't blame the bankers anymore. Next time, it's going to be us. I think that next time is here, right? And it's because it's election year. Otherwise, you know, we could be whatever. Who cares?
And the sad part is, like, they're going to blame and do whatever, and it's not going to make a fucking difference.
Nothing is going to fucking change, because really the problem here is the government. Really, the reason why housing is so unaffordable is because they printed money like it's fucking going out of style.
Yeah.
But the average American public, the 30-year-old who can't think about, you know, they can't afford rent, forget buying a house. They're not thinking about M2 money supply and Fed policy with reverse repos. They're thinking about those damn greedy realtors, right? And that's what's going to come next. And I think – and as we think about, like, failure of NAR's communication vehicle, like, we're going to rely on them to defend the industry against that? We need some change. We need some reform. We need some confidence up in their ranks. Like, right the fuck now. Right now. And this misstep, maybe, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's the impetus. Maybe it's the catalyst. So instead of NAR being destroyed, maybe it's the catalyst that leads to the type of reform we need. But we need it soon, because the election is this year. And I'm telling you, the second half of this year is going to be PR nightmare city for the industry. Right? Not because of anything we've done. Because we have become the scapegoat du jour for the problem with housing. Mark my words.
But again, I'll go back of your, you know, you're saying, you know, complete abject failure. But again, $418 million, and then
hold on.
And then let me add to that, nothing changes.
Right.
Big win.
Which is why I said part one, I was like, this is a ginormous win. This is a total victory. And then I found about throwing half, like, your most important members.
Well, I mean, if this gets resolved, I mean, I couldn't think of a bigger win. You only pay $418 million, and you get to fucking do business like you always did.
Okay.
Boom.
Sure. And then by the end of the year, by the time the election day rolls around, realtors are seen as, like, same as fucking used car salesmen and drug dealers.
Yeah, like they are now, right? I mean, you know,
they're
it's not now.
I disagree.
They're pretty high up there, man. I think if you
don't think we're seeing, because we've never had to deal with, like, concerted blame, you know, like being the scapegoat.
Well, yeah, but everybody loves their local realtor. Everybody, you know, everybody likes that. I love Cheryl. I love Steve. Right? I mean,
it's kind of like Congress. We'll... Everybody hates Congress. They love their congressman. Everybody hates realtors. They love their realtor. And I don't. We'll see. We're going to need to see a different level of competence between now and the end of the year for what I think is going to be coming.
Yeah.
So let's leave it there. It's not the most helpful, hopeful, you know, fucking white pill podcast we've ever done. But, you know, we got to spit truth as we see it, man. We could be wrong, but we're not going to lie to you. We're not going to fucking gaslight you. Right? So there's that. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next
time.
Thanks,
everybody. Listen, content is everything. Two Brothers Creative makes it look easy. Right now, business owners really only have two options. The first option is hire a big firm. Now, this big firm is going to come in, make you think that they invented all the algorithms, and start charging you thousands of dollars every month. You don't want to do that. Second option is to do it yourself. Well, that means you got to learn SEO, SEM, copywriting, marketing techniques on the web. Ugh. You should be really focusing on your own product. But now there's a third option. It's called Content in a Box. Give Two Brothers Creative 30 minutes a week and they'll handle everything. Plus, they'll show you how to bring it in-house later on. They'll rebuild your marketing foundation and give you tools and techniques and a new marketing playbook that'll actually produce real results and help you grow your business. Two Brothers Creative will give you the confidence and know-how to tell the SEOs and SEMs and all those other acronyms to get fucked. You're in control now. Get started today at thecontentbox.com.